Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It is December the 2nd, 2005. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures in Williamsville, Illinois. In agricultural news, more on the WTO as the Hong Kong meeting fast approaches. The Japanese have been polled, but no one's saying just yet whether that public wants U.S. beef back on the table. And we'll get an update on the national animal ID system here in the United States. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Just after the bottom of the hour, climatologist Steve Hilberg will join us from the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. That's to take a look at the weather forecast. And somewhere in between, we'll continue our exploration of the next generation of dry grind ethanol plants. It all happens on this Friday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December futures in the wheat pit at 303 and one half were down two. The March contract at 319 and three quarters in Chicago, down two and a quarter. In Kansas City at the Board of Trade, December futures for the wheat pit at 366 were down four and three quarters for the day. From the corn pit in Chicago, December contract 189 and three quarters, up a half. March corn down a half at 203 and a quarter. And the May CBOT contract at 211 and three quarters, down a half cent. December futures were down a half at 239. January soybeans 562 and three quarters, up three. March futures at 570 and a half. They were up two and a half, and the May contract up one and a half today. 574 and three quarters the settlement price. November beans for next year, $5.87, were unchanged. December bean meal, 173.80, up 150. December bean oil, 21.29. They were up 25 for the day. From the Mercantile Exchange, feeder cattle January contract, 116.67 and a half, down 97 and a half cents. December live cattle at 93.02 and a half, were down $1.35. December lean hog, $62.80, were off 55 cents for the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened to the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Mike Zuzolo, Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. Hi, Mike.
Hey there, Todd.
Well, tell me about this week in the bean pit and what you've seen transpire over the last week and a half or so.
Well, probably the biggest thing was the meal. We saw March meal find a double bottom, technically on the daily chart around 169 even, and we think that could be probably coupled with the idea that bird flu and concerns about bird flu starting to moderate. One of our contacts in Chicago today even thought that maybe, you know, the trade is getting an idea in their heads that China is getting the bird flu under control, and that might just start to present itself as conventional wisdom. If you don't get any new news, you know, updates and wire reports over the weekend, they might continue on that path. The other thing we've noted that's more tangible is in the big provinces in China, the big poultry provinces in China, poultry feed demand in the last 15 days to a month and a half, depending on which province we've looked at, has dropped anywhere from 60 to 90%. Now, that's the bad news. The good news in one particular case, and we could, you know, say for sure because it is China, is that the consumption has been picked up with a strong demand growth in pork, and that province we're talking about, it was a 50% increase in pork consumption on a 90% decline in poultry consumption most of the month of November. So that could be a possible nice demand setup for meal, Todd, if that would continue on. The key here is the perception seems to be continuing from China all the way into the Middle East, where Jordan and Egypt and other countries in the Middle East even are culling birds, just on the perception that poultry isn't safe, even though there's no science behind that. If it's cooked, they're going ahead and saying they're not going to buy my poultry. Why don't I just cull the birds instead of feed them out? Seems like that's continuing on, but fortunately what's happening is we're getting a little bit of a push into other meat complexes, and they are buying another meat instead of going back to a rice or back to legumes or something like that. So that's probably most of what we saw in the beans, other than just the sheer technicals, held up very well.
I would like to explore this possibility of increased meal or continuing pork consumption and increased consumption of meal by pork in China. Do you have an idea in the provinces that you're looking at whether this would be one or two hogs at a time, or whether this is more substantial and the provinces are maybe more urbanized, or these are larger operations that may have gotten out of the poultry business and turned to hogs?
No, that's a real good question, and a lot of these numbers are very skittish right now. We don't have a lot of confidence on them, but I'll give you Anhui, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong, but it's A-N-H-U-I, Anhui province. It's one of the largest poultry provinces in China. Poultry feed makes up 80% of the total feed in that province. The largest feed mill has seen a reduction of 60% in feed in the November sales that they've tracked so far. So in that province by itself, you can say, well, there must not be a lot of swine there because they have seen such a dramatic drop in poultry feeding. So what we need to do, meaning us here internally, is kind of attach and find the provinces where a lot of swine are produced and see if we can't see a feed increase there in those provinces if they're different than the poultry provinces. So that's one thing we're looking at. The other thing we looked at this week was the mainland China prices, and these are FAPRI numbers off their 2005 Ag Outlook. Retail prices this year for beef in mainland China, 17.9 yuan per kilogram, pork 14, poultry 10.5. So looking at it just from a price perspective, if you were going to jump because you're sensitive to the confidence level of poultry and you wanted to keep your balance sheet and your budget intact, you would naturally jump from poultry at 10.5 to pork, which is 14 even, and whereas beef is almost double that, so, or 1.5 times that.
Mike, as you talk to your researchers, have them look at the coastal areas for China and production of hogs. The dean of the College of ACES, Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences here, does a number of trips to China and has for better than a couple of decades on pork production in that nation, and that's where he believes pork production will increase and is in fact increasing. So it would be interesting to see whether there's an increase that's related to bird flu in the amount of meal and pork production in those areas. I would think if any place would be coming up, that might be one. You can take a look at that.
Yeah, we'll do. Thank you for that.
But just an idea that you might explore. Let's continue on this line of thought, at least in the bean pit. And the exploration of prices here. I heard you talk to Dave Dickey just a bit this morning about potential pricing out. I was surprised that, in fact, you might be thinking about, and I don't think you were thinking about next year's crop, but maybe this year's crop yet. Did I catch that correctly this morning?
As far as getting some hedges back on around 575, 580?
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The thing that we have to come to terms with as far as the old crop, Todd, is from everything we're getting in the South American crop, at least right now, before their real big rust scare hits a few months down the pike, is they have near ideal weather, and it's some would categorize some of the major Brazilian provinces as near perfect weather, and so you really don't have a lot to hang your hat on. And I think you still have to go back to what we talked about with Dow Jones this week was, look, USDA said it, not us. This is the worst export commitment year-to-date we've seen in 10 years for beans, and you can't get around that. And our mindset is very simple. Demand in this global environment, demand really does put lows in markets. And so until the trade feels like demand is going to be increased, either by increased meal consumption because of swine being fed instead of poultry, and so they don't worry as much about bird flu, or they see the exports really kick into a higher gear, you're really not going to find a bottom until you get that next supply scare. So we really want people and farmers to diversify and manage their risk and trade off the risk of the old crop and sell the rallies, use the new crop if they're going to make any long position decisions and mindsets set up there in the new crop, because that's really where you're going to have to draw down your stocks to get the rally you're looking for.
And turn your attention now to the coarse grains. I want to talk a little bit about wheat and corn both. Tell me about the lows here in the wheat pit and what you make of these.
Well, they're key. And, the biggest thing we want to pass on the radio today is China is a big player next week. They're going to be here for the next 2 weeks touring the United States. We could see very easily where the Chinese would want to soothe and heal up some of the congressional issues that we have on the table. I think it's Senator Schumer out of New York. It's got, a 27% tariff sitting on his desk, ready to enter it into the Senate on all Chinese imports. The Chinese are very sensitive to that, and they don't want that. They know that's not in their best interest. We also have some very big WTO issues, like you talked about, you know, when you hit on the WTO coming into the program. We lost our Ag Committee as far as the WTO just had to drop the draft accord for this December 13th through 18th conference. The U.S. and the EU are already starting to set up on an issue where they don't think the Chinese are meeting all their WTO accord compliance issues. So we think there might be a need for the Chinese to come in here while they're here in the United States and soothe some of these issues by buying some of our wheat, and we're going to certainly be watching for that. And if they do not, then we've got a real problem in the wheat market, we think, and that 295 low that December wheat futures tested in Chicago this week and just bounced like a rubber ball off of may be in jeopardy of being violated again. So that's kind of how we're setting ourselves up.
No, and that hasn't been the case for a while, although I'm trying to think about what that chart looks like for the wheat on the long term, and it trades 280 to 326, 329, 330, is that right?
Something like that? Yeah, that's exactly right. You really don't go below 280 until you go back to the early part of 2003, and that was just for a short time. And other than that, it was during the deflationary time period, the 99-02 time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then if you can discuss very quickly what you've seen in the corn pit, and then talk about this 27-cent LDP. It's finally really moved back below 30 cents, and the 40 cents, I'm sure, is gone for quite some time now.
Yeah, you know, we were on the Farm Progress website earlier this week, and they have some really nice basis charts on there. And, you know, maybe U of I does too, but I was really struck by the basis pattern charts that they have on that website. You usually go up in basis, and then you tend to peter out as you get into the first of the year. And that makes sense this year because farmers have been tighter holders of corn. They've also been in the mindset that they want to get a rally out of this market, but they're going to need cash flow pretty soon too. So I guess our mindset is the LDP could come back around maybe 5, maybe 7 cents, but it'd probably be well after the first of the year, and it'd probably be associated with the throw-in-the-towel selling or the cash flow need selling. But if it gets any, you know, if it goes from 35 to 42, we would certainly jump on it at that point. Probably the vast majority of 42, you know, out to the larger numbers that we saw early on, were due more to the hurricane and the rivers and the lack of barges. So we really want to hope for a 10 to 15 cent rally in March corn futures. We've been encouraging producers to lock in their basis here as the DEIS goes off the board and the March becomes the main contract elevators use, and then try and get a 10, 15 cent rally in corn. Let the rest of 05 go.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Just the fact that we're looking at 240 DEIS corn. We think that's undervalued by quite a bit, and we're going ahead and getting some 06 calls bought in anticipation of selling higher levels.
Thanks much. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
Mike Zuzlow is with Risk Management Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Friday afternoons.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
If you're looking for some charts for the cash markets, FarmDoc actually has a couple of them that are pretty decent at farmdoc.uiuc.edu, Central Illinois corn and soybean cash prices. Taking a look now at what the weather forecast might be for this evening. From our own Ed Kieser in the north, he says mostly cloudy, some flurries. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy. Lows tonight from 13 in northwestern Illinois to 30 in the far south. Tomorrow, Ed says in the north, mostly cloudy skies, some flurries. In central sections, cloudy. A mix of precipitation arriving during the afternoon, and in the south, cloudy with rain arriving. Highs tomorrow from 24 in far northwestern Illinois to 44 in the far south. Dave Dickey's here now with a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, U.S. Trade Representative Rob Portman says the upcoming World Trade Organization summit will, at best, produce only incremental progress toward a new trade deal. Farm subsidies remain a major sticking point. Portman says he hopes to see improvements on agriculture market access, as well as the other two main areas of services and manufactured goods. WTO members will gather December 13th through the 18th in Hong Kong to discuss the Doha Development Agenda trade round. U.S. officials had hoped to strike an agricultural deal at the meeting, but say now the new goal is to make progress and plan another meeting early next year. Japan's public hearings on resumption of U.S. beef trade ended earlier this week, and the results are beginning to trickle in. 41% say the Food Safety Commission's five-month period of deliberation on the issue is too short. 39% say the timing is appropriate, and almost 10% say deliberations have gone on too long. Commission members say they cannot reveal the opinions received from the public while they are analyzing them, but the opinions are expected to include discontent with the possible resumption of imports, as many consumers voiced concerns about the safety of North American beef during the hearings. John Queen is vice president of the U.S. National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Queen says all is on track for resumption of beef trade with Japan no later than January.
Yes, we certainly are, and we're certainly proud of NCBA and its effort to keep the trade agenda right up front in the Bush administration as they talk with the Japanese president and prime ministers. They have proven to us that they're willing to accept our product again. They still have a couple of waiting periods to go through with the general public and a couple of the government waiting periods. But hopefully by the end of the year, we should have our product back in the consumers' hands in Japan.
Japanese officials say there is a possibility that the FSC may make a recommendation to the Japanese government on resumption of U.S. beef trade on December 8th. The National Farmers Union Board of Directors met in Little Rock, Arkansas this week. A major topic of discussion at that meeting, a rumor that USDA has changed its mind and decided to propose a government-run National Animal Identification Program. NFU Vice President of Government Affairs Tom Bias says he does not know for sure whether USDA has decided to retake control of National Animal ID, but he hopes that happens.
We're hearing that USDA is getting a lot of criticism for their privatization proposal, and that hopefully they will back off of that, and they should back off of it. I think, you know, come out here and listen to these farmers and the concerns, and I think they're willing to help address this challenge, but they don't want to be the ones that bear the entire brunt and certainly don't want to be abused.
According to Bias, National Animal ID should be about national security and not marketing. Mexico's Deputy Economy Minister Alejandro Gomez says a World Trade Organization ruling against Mexican import duties on U.S. white long grain rice does not mean the duties will be lifted. Gomez says a final ruling earlier this week by a WTO panel means Mexico must redo some parts of the anti-dumping investigation to bring it in line with WTO agreements. But Gomez stressed the import duties on U.S. rice would remain in place. University of Arkansas researchers say they have found a way to convert chicken fat to a biodiesel fuel. Michael Popp, an associate professor of agricultural economics, said it is too early to tell if making biodiesel fuel from chicken fat is economically feasible. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your director of agricultural programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, up next, we'll continue our discussion from yesterday about the next generation dry grind ethanol plants and the kinds of research that are being done here on the campus of the University of Illinois. The next generation of fuel from corn is in the works, as you'll hear, in this round two for the agricultural feedstock known as maize. Renewable fuels in the United States start in the cornfield. Farmers across the nation have been working since the early 70s to gain acceptance for fuel made from corn, ethanol. In those years, Congress passed a tax break for ethanol producers. It's also about the same time researchers at the University of Illinois really started working on the next generation of fuel to be produced from corn, butanol, says scientist Hans Blaschek.
Right. It has great potential for use as a liquid biofuel as well. It's a little bit pricey right now, but the addition of those two extra carbons over what ethanol has actually gives it performance characteristics that are superior to ethanol in terms of energy content, you know, the octane rating, for example, in terms of the solubility characteristics of the material. And so that makes it much more sort of potentially usable as a liquid fuel.
Well, that's because it has a higher octane rating and, unlike ethanol, doesn't absorb water readily. It means butanol can be stored in a tank and even put into a pipeline. This is not to say that ethanol as it is produced today would no longer exist. Butanol would be an additional byproduct, probably along with many others.
If you think today of an ethanol dry mill as sort of the beginning platform, with ethanol as the platform chemical and starting chemical for the biorefinery, one can imagine, you know, that this will translate out into the future with lots of other potential chemicals being produced. And certainly, as we think about co-products, we have to start thinking about organisms other than just yeast that, for production of ethanol, but other organisms that have this ability to utilize 5-carbon sugars, which would be the types of sugars that would be coming off from, say, cellulose or co-product utilization.
And frankly, that's exactly what Hans Blaschek and his colleagues at the U of I have done. They've manipulated a bacterium to make better use of 5-carbon sugars, and it's economical. It could take the fiber left from the ethanol production process and make it into butanol, another renewable fuel from corn. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Joining us now for a look at the cash grain market is Bruce Bostard of FCC Futures out of the Williamsville Farmers Co-op in Williamsville, Illinois. Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
Tell me about what looks like it could be another low that was made in the corn pit this week and whether that might hold and if the cash low, I suppose, which was made maybe a couple of months ago, October the 18th, I think, is in any danger over the wintertime months.
I don't know if we'll see this hold or not. It's trying to act like a little bit longer term. I have some doubts on whether this will hold. Of course, we're into delivery now in the December. We've got about a week and a half, 2 weeks to go on the D's contract. March corn is what everything's trading off of now, and it seems to keep bouncing off of right at $2. You bust through that, you probably go down and try and test the low where the December went off. So that's kind of the concern there. Basis-wise, we've seen improvement here with nothing moving, trying to pull out the hedge supplies that are out there. I have to worry about what happens when cash grain actually does start moving. I can't imagine that these basis levels will hold. I think they'll back off fast when the cash actually does start going.
When it does, and you say back off fast, but how much are you scared that they're going to back off a lot and then to widen out a great deal?
I could well see five to 10 cents worth of basis break when initially hits. We'll probably overdo it to kind of do that shock absorber effect initially and then tighten back up slowly as time goes on.
Is your feeling that that'll come prior to December 31st for tax purposes or in January?
I think January is my gut feeling. Sales, I'm not getting anything really for nibbles on cash sales yet or anybody even looking too seriously, so that says to me that we're a couple weeks away yet from seeing anything move for cash purposes. One of the things that bothers me on cash grain moving is, you know, we've gone basically through harvest now into the first part of December without any real cash sales. It has been amazingly quiet, and we basically bought almost nothing through the harvest and stored the crop. The only sales out there in general were forced sales to make room. And the more you contract your marketing year, the more danger you have at some point of a wall or maybe one or two walls of grain hitting the market that it can't absorb. And that's when your basis will back off, try and ration that out, and then improve later on.
We appreciate you being with us today. Tell me your bids.
We are 178 on nearby corn and 544 on the beans.
Bruce, thanks much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with FCC Futures out of the Williamsville Farmers Co-op in Williamsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with climatologist Steve Hilberg. Your local newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Bond has been set at $2 million for a man accused of killing an ISU student whose body was found in a burned-out chicken house in Mississippi. In court today, McLean County Assistant State's Attorney Kim Campbell said Maurice Wallace's bloody fingerprint was found in the home of Olamide Adeoye. Wallace was charged with first-degree murder yesterday. Illinois farmers have plenty of weighty items to plow through when they meet in St. Louis this weekend for the Illinois Farm Bureau's four-day convention, but many expect Congress's next farm bill to get a lot of attention. Federal lawmakers next year expect to begin drafting changes to the U.S. Farm Bill, which comes up for renewal in 2007. Many Farm Bureau officials hope the new measure won't stray far from the old one. More than a year after getting city approval, the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District is still waiting for a federal license for a methadone clinic in downtown Urbana. A Drug Enforcement Administration spokesman was unavailable for comment. Julie Pride of the Public Health District says she doesn't know when the approval will come, but she says the problems the clinic would address, heroin addiction and the spread of disease through contaminated syringes, are still around. A new report says Indiana has fallen behind 26 other states in fighting teenage smoking due to funding cuts imposed to make up for budget shortfalls. The report says Indiana will spend about 70% less this year on smoking education than it did in 2003. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels says this week's federal court ruling barring prayers in the Indiana House from mentioning Jesus Christ is, quote, regrettable. Daniels told reporters today that the prayer should be inclusive, but the rules should not be dictated by courts. McHenry County, Illinois dairy farmer Lee Wenzel says his operation is almost back to normal, a year after a botulism outbreak nearly wiped out his herd. Wenzel now immunizes his herd against botulism, and donated cows and new calves restored the herd. A group of fishermen based in Illinois is challenging a Wisconsin angler's claim that he caught a world record 69-pound, 11-ounce muskie. The World Record Muskie Alliance has filed a protest with the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, which recognizes that muskie as the biggest ever caught. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. This is the Closing Market Report. We're joined now by the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey here in Champaign County, Steve Hilberg. Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather, other than it is really pretty cold out there at the moment. 21 degrees here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Still with me, Steve? Oop. Well, I suppose we lost Steve. That's okay. Steve was joining us by his cell phone, and that's what happens from time to time. In that case, we do have the weather forecast from our own Ed Kieser for this afternoon and this evening. Tonight, he says, in the north, mostly cloudy skies, some flurries. Elsewhere, Ed says, partly to mostly cloudy, lows will range from 13 in northwestern Illinois to 30 in the far south tomorrow. In the north, mostly cloudy skies, says Ed, some flurries. Central sections having flurries, mostly cloudy, some mixed precipitation arriving during the afternoon there as well. In the south, it'll be cloudy, some rain arriving. Highs tomorrow will range from 24 in far northwestern Illinois to 44 in the far south. In the Sunday, the extended forecast looks like this. In the north and central sections, partly to mostly cloudy, a few flurries. In the south, mostly cloudy, some rain and snow showers Monday. In the north and central parts of Illinois and in northwestern Indiana, mostly cloudy, some flurries there. Far southern and eastern Illinois will have a clouds and a chance of snow. That happening on Sunday.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
That's today's edition of the Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow at 11:30 for Commodity Week. It's our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. And don't forget, you can pick that program up this evening around 6 o'clock if you'd like on our website at willl.uiuc.edu. Just click on AM and then Agriculture. And if you want it delivered directly to your computer automatically, sign up for our podcast. Also, don't forget to sign up for our newsletter on that website as well at willl.uiuc.edu. You have a great weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.